Wow. What a conversation. You can't be what you can't see. These are the words that have guided my guest this week, the phenomenal, the pioneering Edwina Dunn, OBE. Now, Edwina might not be a name you know immediately, but I can bet that you've all interacted with her creation, the Tesco Club Card, an invention that basically revolutionised customer loyalty. Having been at the forefront of big data before that was even the language that you could describe it, Edwina's impact, oh my gosh, it's just changed every way that retailers use data, the way that they look at us customers. And it's through her visionary leadership that she's also basically changed the role of the woman in the tech world. And I loved every single drop of this conversation, from her kindness to her storytelling to her journey that was just phenomenal. Hard work, grit mixed with female qualities, showing up in the room, showing everyone how it was done, to now on the mission of the female lead, which is an amazing movement to empower girls and women to pursue their dreams, to break the societal cycles and gender roles that we all find ourselves in. Edwina's story is extraordinary. And in this podcast, I tell her something that I truly meant and I'm now holding on to. It's something I've been looking for the last 20 years. And towards the end of the podcast, I let her know. Enjoy this episode and just remember that our potential as women is limitless.
Bow your head and let your eyelids close on down. Where we're going, you won't need to bring your frown.
Hi, I'm Holly Tucker, and welcome to my podcast, Conversations of Inspiration. I founded my first business, Not on the High Street, at 28, with a newborn strapped to my chest. Nearly 20 years on, he's all grown up, and I'm running my second business, Holly & Co. I've learned so much about taking risks, running a business, and some extraordinary life lessons along the way. And I know others have too. Yet despite the wealth of experience we have between us, lessons like this are often left unheard, and it can feel like we're travelling our paths alone. So I've reached out to founders and those who simply inspire me to share their hard-earned wisdom with you. My hope is that collectively, these remarkable realizations will help you on your own journey. I like to think of it as inspiration for life. If you enjoyed this episode, might I ask you to share it with a friend and to like, subscribe, and review it so that together we can ignite people's passion across the UK. Now, let's begin this week's conversation of inspiration. Hello, Edwina. Welcome to Conversations of Inspiration.
Thank you, Holly. Delighted to be with you.
Now, I wanted to read just something that's in your book and to let everyone know who you are before we get started.
Mm-hmm.
So listen to this, everybody. This is who we've got on today's show. One of the most accomplished entrepreneurs of our time reveals how unlocking women's potential can change the course of business, economics, and even communities. Edwina Dunn has seen firsthand how women's voices and influence can transform companies, societies, cultures for the better. As the architect behind Tesco's award-winning Club Card and pioneer in the analysis of big data, Edwina has spent decades studying how to leverage the untapped power of women as change makers. I mean, yes, I am just pumped. So I want to just go back, because everyone knows I go back to the beginning in this podcast. So you've had the most fantastic life and career, but you were born in Buxton as the middle child of three, and you spent your early years in Brazil, where your father worked as an electrical engineer building power stations. I was brought up partly in Holland, actually, and I feel like there is something quite amazing about having a childhood in another country. Can you tell me about it? I mean, I can imagine the colours and the smells and the culture was incredible.
It was. I mean, to be fair, I was really young. I was quite upset that I was born in Buxton, Derbyshire, and my brother and sister were born in Rio de Janeiro. It's taken me a lifetime to overcome that jealousy. But no, we have some wonderful stories. And I think, you know, the pictures of my mother and father and my mother walking the three little children to Ipanema Beach, and, you know, the wonderful scenery, the Corcovado, the Sugarloaf Mountain, you know, it was all very exotic. And I really treasure it. I mean, I was quite young when we came back. As soon as my brother hit school age, my parents decided it was time for them to come back. But my father had managed to save up enough money to put a deposit on a house. And so I think they were incredibly brave, really.
Yeah.
I mean, all those years ago, it was...
What year would that have been?
Oh, they must have gone out in the 1950s.
Right.
And so can you imagine
the
country opening up? And they met some amazing people while they were out there who've actually been lifelong friends. People who, you know, sent their children to school in England subsequently. Even one of my closest parents' friends who ended up being someone we discovered years later ran MI6.
Stop it.
No, I'm serious. And he was like a family friend. And he ran MI6 in, I think it was Southern Europe. And it was like, wow. We just thought that was Uncle Bob, you know.
That is definitely a dinner party conversation, isn't it? Oh, that's so fun. But your mum also was very committed to family life, working hard to ensure that everything ran smoothly. You know, you were abroad, three children. It sounded like your parents both had very strong work ethic. Mm. Do you think that that's where you inherited it from?
100%. I mean, they both came from very working class backgrounds. My father, you know, did night school. He got all of his qualifications through. He was actually a Spitfire pilot.
Wow.
He was trained in the war and just really luckily got his wings as the war ended. I think he was one of those who snuck in early with his age, but he was determined to have this amazing life, even though he had a really dreadfully poor start. And, you know, my mother also had that tough beginning. She was really ill when she was 14 and left school. But she was beautiful and she was really hardworking. And they both showed that you could make it by working very, very hard. And I think that's where I took my colours from, really.
And your parent, you mentioned that your parents came back to the UK for education and you attended Surbiton High School, which was a girls only grammar school at that point. And I read that you said you didn't take school very seriously. So there's hope for all of us, by the way, that you were quite lazy. And even though you achieved A levels in French, English and geography, you obviously did something right. And you had an inspiring headmistress who also believed the possibility, you know, was endless for women and for girls. Now, that must have, again, you know, it's not nowadays. This must have been quite pioneering in itself.
Yes. Miss Kobrak, her name was. And I think her parents helped the Jews escape from Poland during the war. She's a phenomenal lady. And she really overinvested in our science laboratories.
Right.
And so we, as an all-girls grammar school, were really encouraged to take the sciences and not be scared of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they built, as I say, these beautiful brand new laboratories. So we were very lucky. And frankly, I should have flown in my career from those years, but I was very distracted. I honestly don't know why.
What was distracting you, boys?
No, not really. Not really. I think I had a lot of outside of school Saturday jobs and evening jobs, I learnt very early that if I wanted to go out at all and have any freedom, I needed to earn some money. So quite early on, I was thinking up schemes for how to earn more than the very
pocket
minimal
money
you get from stacking shelves or being a cashier in a supermarket, back then anyway. But I did all of those jobs. So I started a babysitting circle with my sister. And God, that worked so well. We were so busy, largely because we had no social life whatsoever. And so we were always available. And when we weren't available, we made my poor brother cover for us. So we sold him too.
Entrepreneurial spirit right from the start. I love that. A girl in the hurry, basically. I mean, very much. I do know that feeling. I remember having, I was a silver service girl, so I can still hold four plates on one arm. I cleaned pubs on a Saturday morning. I also did babysitting, which was a good thing. And it's an amazing thing. I think that some of us are hungry for life and sort of adventure and almost, you know, I can see that you sort of built that yourself. It's fascinating the number of guests actually that refer back to a teacher on this podcast to having such a pivotal influence, I suppose, you know, that now when they look back in hindsight can see how important these individuals are. Do you think that that's It's a tough order nowadays, do you not think, to do that?
Yeah, we need role models, you know, and I really believe that you can't be what you can't see. And so, you know, the whole of, you know, the campaign that I run now, the Female Lead, is all about making visible women who are alive today, shaping the world around them. So many women doing amazing things, but we're just not captured in the history books. So I think the more we can identify with someone, you know, it may not be just one person. We might pick a little bit of this person and a little bit of that. But what we create is a composite, which is it's like a, you know, like you'd have a mood board when you're designing, you know, your new house or some clothes or something that you were making and wanted to wear. Well, you know, we have a mood board for our role models. Mm. We have the idea that they should be this and they should have that. And when you have that, I believe it's so much easier to develop those traits and those skills. So I think as women, we really, you ask a boy who his heroes are, who his role models are, he will list 5 to 10 people straight off, most of them sports people, but not exclusively. Girls, it will be their mother or their grandmother, maybe their teacher. That's it.
Yeah, gosh. Never heard anyone so eloquently put that. It's imperative. And I'm going to come back to your story because we're going to go more into your amazing work. Because after completing your degree in Bournemouth University, you joined CACI, the American Software Consultancy Company. The work that was done there was used data that was used to sort of classify groups. So we're going back in time here for clients and retailers and banks. And now we might refer to it as big data. But back then it was looking at classifying groups that people could, I presume, learn about them. This was early 80s. What was it like to be part of such a pioneering company and a woman, especially at that time?
Yeah, I mean, it was a technology. It was like a software engineering company. And it was full of incredibly bright, mostly men. It was 2,500 people globally. So it was very, very big. I mean, it was so exciting. I can't tell you. I mean, all my lights went on when I started work. I thought, I have died and gone to heaven. I'm surrounded by these amazingly clever people who were not boring. They had so much fun and they celebrated success.
Yeah.
But they worked incredibly hard. And we were this little pioneering team. So I was able to fit into this small but you know, perfectly formed young team and grow with it.
How old were you at that point?
22.
Right. So young. Gosh.
I was young.
What a place to be moulded in.
Oh, I was so impressionable. And I learned there was a lady there called Melanie. She's Poole now. I can't remember what her maiden name was. And she took me under her wing, and she was a geographer like me, only she was a Cambridge geographer. And she was also a Cambridge Blue, in that she was a fantastic yachtswoman. And she was just, she was so open and helpful. And she showed me that you can work really hard, but also have fun at work and do a brilliant job. And I really thank her to this day, because she was probably the first real role model that shaped me.
On your mood board?
Yes.
It is an incredible thing. Do you think that women, you know, have a pivotal role to play within our workspaces? I'm just thinking about your lady. I'm thinking about my ladies at work, who ended up actually becoming my business partner, not on the high street, mm-hmm. but she took me under her wing. She didn't knock my ladder down. Do you feel that there's sometimes a competitiveness that can get the better of us, or fuel our insecurity so we don't help each other? You know, I don't think we mean it, but what do you think in the workplace happens sometimes?
I think sadly, one of the inspirational books we put together was called, you know, We Rise by Lifting Others. Mm. And it was really a very direct attempt to encourage women to put out that hand and help, because it doesn't take away from you, you know, just because you've done well doesn't mean you have to stop the next person doing well, because it might reflect mm-hmm. on your achievements or
take up some space.
Absolutely. And you know, we have been programmed not to take up too much space. So we're fighting with a lot of instincts that have been placed there by society. And I think, to be honest, the future success of the economy, our economy, the global economy, is to release the power and the force of good that is women. And if we can learn to bounce with each other and off each other, I think we're unstoppable. I really honestly do. But this sort of mealy-mouth thing that sort of kicks in, we have to lose, because we are reducing our collective power. And the more we can stay together and say, you know, we are a force that is remarkable and inspiring, the more we'll all grow. And I, you know, sincerely believe that.
Gosh. Gosh, you don't want to get into politics, do you? How many people have said that? I mean, oh my goodness, I want to just follow you. You know, this is the thing. We need, oh, you are amazing. I'd love to know what it was about data and technology, right, that captured you, because it is exciting, it is magical. But also, I think that people, especially women, we're talking about women, are scared of it. Tell me why you weren't. Tell me, firstly, why you weren't, and then why you think we are.
Well, it's a very good question. Look, I think the word technology and the whole use of technology has been a little hijacked. It's become a quite masculine set of words. If you ever see adverts or advertising around tech, it's all about big and strong and fast and, you know, all of these things. My interest actually is much more data. And for me, data is about the behavioral sciences. So it's about how you can predict people and what they're going to do next. And that's why it's so interesting. What people do is impossible to predict one-on-one, but if you have 1,000 people, you can predict it quite accurately. If you have 100,000 people, you can predict it really accurately, which was the science that I got involved with right from the beginning. So having thousands and thousands of people means you can see a whole behaviour that is incredibly predictable. So, you know, young mums, you can predict what they're going to put in their shopping basket. Empty nesters, you can see they get try and become healthy again and not have all the, you know, ready meals or,
oh my gosh,
you know, yogurt.
You're predicting me. This is me. Harry's just gone to uni. Frank and me on a health kick. How do you know that?
Because you are so predictable as 100,000 people. And this to me is super, super exciting. Women are fantastic storytellers. And if you combine individual stories, so like if we told your story individually, we could then say, and there are 100,000 women like Holly. And they, their spend is multi-millions, right?
Yeah.
And that is the key. So you combine the story with the data science and you get something that no strategy in isolation would reveal.
Yeah.
So data science is better than the best strategic minds in terms of forecasting accuracy.
I can see in your kind eyes, you love people. And so actually your data was just bringing people to life. And the way you as a woman, and we're going to talk on meeting your husband, Clive, and I've been in your book in Mexico, the way that you've looked at it is it needed that female brain or that female storytelling to actually bring to life. You know, there's 100,000 Hollies. You know, there is, it's just fantastic. I'm going to keep going because I'm so excited to be talking to you. Sorry, I need to calm myself down. In the years that followed, you went to meet your husband, Clive Humby at CACI and become the company's youngest vice president. But in 1989, you and Clive left after becoming frustrated by the sort of lack of appetite in new technology and you started your own company. Now, I also read that wasn't, and I've also watched your talks, you know, that wasn't just quite as it went, did it?
No.
Can you tell us what happened?
Well, it wasn't a pretty ending, which you always hope for, you know. I mean, we wanted to, we saw that the future was customer data. So we were using census data and it was great. And honestly, I loved working at CACI. I learned so much. It was fantastic. But we could see that the future was changing and that customer data, because we could see it, we knew other people would be able to see it. And so we wanted to move to the next thing. And the company we were with were making so much profit from what we were doing that they didn't want to invest that profit in the next thing. Mm-hmm. And so we really had to choose between what we believed in and guaranteed salaries and bonuses for the next few years. And so ridiculously and very naively, we thought, no, we must follow our beliefs. But we did hedge our bets. And I said to Clive, who we were married at the time, I said, don't you worry, you go off and do, you know, what you believe will be the next thing. And I'll stay and pay the mortgage because we've just taken on this big, fat new mortgage.
Yeah.
I then found out that the world is quite tough. And literally, when they eventually, having tried to persuade him, when they eventually accepted his resignation, they fired me 10 minutes later and said, well, you'd just be a spy in the camp. And so you've got to go. And I was truly heartbroken, deeply insulted and emotionally exhausted. Mm. And I thought, how, you know, life's not fair. Mm. Right. Well, we all know life's not fair. But I was still quite young at the time. So we were broke. And then, you know, they really wanted to stop us building this new, what might be competitive business. So they came after us in the law courts. They slapped an injunction on. We were taken to the High Court because we won one client, a new client.
But a new client, said, not their client.
Not their client, a new client. We won a new client and they said unfair. We used our...
Your magic.
Specialist knowledge and what have you. It nearly broke us. I mean, that we appointed lawyers. We paced the room at night worrying that we were going to be destroyed. It nearly broke us. And there was one moment, Holly, where you know when the chips are down and you look at each other and you say, if they break us, if we are broke after all of this, can we rebuild?
Mm.
And we looked at each other and said, yes, we can. And at that point, their power just goes. And we thought, right. And we fought, we won.
Wow.
It still cost us a lot of money because they carried on, but we were free. And so that's when we started. So we were broke and we started a new business. And then, having gone through all of this, we said, right, well, now's the time for a family. So it was even harder and we were even madder.
Is that the power? Would you say that's the power? Because nothing shifted except your mindset in that moment.
It's mindset. It's exactly that, for me, is the epitome of when a mindset liberates you and gives you a ridiculous new power that you never had, which is no one is going to stop you doing what you really believe in.
God, absolutely. Switching a light on
that
illuminates a new path that was always there. And that's the power we all hold.
Yeah, once someone takes away our sense of purpose, our sense of what we believe in, they destroy so much. And I think it's so easy to just fall into line and say, this is the easier way to live my life. But I believe, to really follow, work really hard, but follow what you believe in is the greatest joy you can have.
Absolutely. Do what you love. I mean, I want to talking about love, the power of two, because I love this concept that you refer to. You initially started your company in the bedroom. And I know you've spoken before about the sort of different skills that you and Clive have and the strength of this as this partner. And you refer to it as the power of two. And I wonder if you might share that philosophy. I remember my Sophie from Not in the High Street. She also went to Surbiton and very much looked up to you. And you've spoken about this. And we used to always talk about it, the power of two. I was dyslexic and a sort of visionary and had the gift of the gab. And she could rewrite the English dictionary. Do you know what I mean? And was able to look at the detail. And I was able to look at the future. And so we often referred to you, way back in that. But it would be such an honour if you could tell us from your point of view what that means.
Oh, it's really nice to hear about you and Sophie thinking about that. And let's all raise a glass to Surbiton High School. I still love Surbiton. I love Polly, who runs Surbiton, as far as I'm concerned. I think number one, I must just say, I'm not allowed to say we started the business in the bedroom anymore because everyone titters. So I have to say it's the kitchen table now.
Okay, kitchen table.
Yes,
sorry. Let's get it out of the gutters. Onto the kitchen table.
So the power of two was really, it's really a description of how my husband, Clive, and I work together. He is, as you've rightly described, my polar opposite. So he was the clever software engineer that I talked about from CACI days. He did computer science and mathematics. So he loved creating all the algorithms, all the fantastic tools that we based the whole business on. And he was, and was often called by our clients, the genius. Right, which is hard to live with, but anyway, he was the genius. I don't know who I was. Someone once told me a business needs two things. One is a genius and the other is a bastard. So I thought, okay, well, I'm not the genius. So I hope I'm not a bastard. So, anyway.
You're not a bastard.
He did once. It was a man. It was a man who told me that. So I think I can put that one to side. But the power of two is really, really important. I don't know where this idea came from that only one person should lead a company or a country, frankly, for that matter, when actually the combination of two opposites is phenomenally strong. You know, it's that adage of 1 + 1 = 3.
Mm.
It's two opposites together can do just about anything. They cover each other's back. They're stronger, they're better. And I'll tell you, when we were working with Dunnhumby, which was our new business, and we worked with retailers all over the world, multi-million, billion euro businesses, we would always send two people to support that retailer in that new country. They were often quite young, but they had phenomenal capability, and the two of them together would not let the other fail.
Mm.
And you know what? We didn't fail in any of those countries.
Incredible.
And Tesco once said to me, how did you go all around the world and not fail with such a young, underdeveloped leadership team? And I said, it was the power of two.
Gosh, what do you think it is that... Is it ego? Obviously, our systems are set up. You know, is it ego? You don't want to have anyone else next to you to share.
Yeah, yeah, I do. Because, look, everybody who's got any form of emotional intelligence knows that they have flaws.
Mm.
So I suppose people can say they group a leadership team around them. And certainly I had a phenomenal leadership team at Dunnhumby when I was the CEO there. But, you know, nowadays leadership teams have been replaced a lot by governance teams.
Mm.
And are they really the same kind of balance? I'm not sure.
Not sure. Absolutely not, no.
I think, you know, to work with your equal partner keeps your ego in check.
Yeah.
And make sure that you both do your damnedest to make the whole business just work.
Yeah.
Super. And it also meant, by the way, that we were 50-50 male and female. And at no point were the technical experts outgunned by the kind of business experts in the business.
Yeah, right.
There was a sort of an equal...
An
equality.
Yes.
A diversity, yeah. And an equality that existed.
One of the things I'm most proud of at Holly & Co. is the fact that over 90% of the small businesses that sell on our marketplace are female founded. It means that every time you shop with us, you are voting with your money for the kind of world you want to live in. By supporting women-owned businesses, you're backing the idea of flexible working, showing the next generation what's possible, and actively championing the female economy. It means that despite only 2 pence of every pound's worth of funding in the UK going to women, and women still being the primary caregivers, we are rising above and finding a new way to live our way. You can support female-founded businesses by looking out for the badges on our marketplace. In fact, we have lots of ways to shop by your values, from choosing black-owned businesses or socially positive businesses to products that are made of recycled material or made here in the UK. Find out more at Holly & Co. For now, though, let's get back to our conversation of inspiration. I want to come back to Dunnhumby and your vision for this customer insights and business using data to, you know, you're building customer profiles and understanding consumer habits. But of course, at this time that we're talking about, this language didn't really properly exist. Neither did any customer loyalty scheme, which for anyone listening now, you just can't even believe that that was the case. And it was 1994 and you were approached by Tesco about launching a loyalty card. And I wonder, can you tell us about that? Because I remember reading that the chairman said that he learned more about his business in 3 months than he'd learned in 30 years. Now, That must have been intimidating to the business to have you come in. But how did you sell it in? How did it become a positive?
Well, you know, all credit. That was Ian McLaurin, now Lord McLaurin. But to his credit, very smart, very hardworking man, as was his entire leadership team, Terry Leahy, Tim Mason, David Reed, so many others. But that modesty, that willingness to see that someone brought something new to the table is the most remarkable quality I have seen. And it's rare. It's very, very rare. But that acknowledgement that I'm learning something new was what made us, it was what opened the door and made us successful. We could so easily have done the analysis, presented it, and they'd gone, I knew all of that. That would have been what so many companies did subsequently, right? But they didn't. They opened their arms and said, they didn't even say teach us. They said, you do that and we will execute brilliantly, which is what we do best. And that's exactly what they did.
Power of two again, in a way.
Maybe so. You know, I'd never put those two elements together, but you're absolutely right. And then other retailers around the world literally came to England to find us because no one else was doing what we did. And they basically said, we want to do a Tesco. Teach us. Do it for us. We were so bad at selling. We just sat in England and everybody came and found us. It was amazing.
I mean, as one of my investors said, problem deluxe, that is. That's a problem deluxe. I mean, so it's the first time a retailer was basically, this is what the fame is, that a retailer was able to build an accurate picture of a shopper that they liked and how often they shopped and how often they spent. And this was an insight that basically you gave an insight into Tesco's customers' lives. And it was groundbreaking stuff. Am I right in saying that Tesco saw a 28% uplift in sales after the induction of Clubcard? And I think I also read in your book it was 50% growth.
Yeah, and it was just phenomenal. In 3 years, Tesco doubled their market share.
That was it.
So it's never been seen before or since. I remember Robert Peston basically said there are very few new ideas in the business world, but this was one of them. And the point that changed it was the fact that what Tesco and all the other retailers knew was how many cans of baked beans or packets of cornflakes they sold every day. What they didn't know was that Holly would buy 2 packets of cornflakes a month and Edwina would buy none. And it was adding in the customer dimension that made all the difference in the world. And that's what opened the door for them then recognizing consumers are different. They want and need different things. And that was the power that we brought. And that equated, Holly, that equated to 60 billion pounds over 10 years. Extra. 60 billion extra over 10 years. Can you imagine? It was phenomenal.
I bet you on their Christmas card list after that, huh?
I am. And do you know, so many people said to me afterwards, you didn't sell for a very good price. You must resent how much they made out of it. I don't at all. I think they were brilliant and they were a huge business. And yes, we added something X ingredient, but, you know, they treated us decently and we agreed what we would get and we walked away with it. So, you know, I still respect them to this day for doing exactly what they said they'd do.
So a better happy ending on this part of the journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you said that you sold the business, am I right, to Tesco in 2011, was that?
Yeah.
And at that stage, the company had 1,500 employees across 25 countries, and it was managing strategies for 350 million customers.
Yes.
The 22-year-old, can you imagine telling her? I mean, you're going to talk about your letter to younger self, but wow. Did you ever, as two founders and entrepreneurs, we do have a habit of potentially never looking back and only looking forward and editing what we're doing and sort of crucifying ourselves. Tell me, was there a milestone moment? Did you think when you sold that business, we might have the X factor?
In truth, yes, because until then, we just dared to hardly breathe.
Yes.
It was like nose to the grindstone. We were charging around the world, working our socks off. And then we had a few months. Once we knew the line had been drawn, our role, once we passed the banner to the next CEO, we then had about 6 months of going around the world saying thank you to all our partners, all our clients. And, you know, we had the most wonderful time. We had all these lovely celebrations and, you know, it was a very, very happy time. And then, you know, when we literally stepped away, we had a year off, which was fantastic. We were exhausted.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you look back and you think, yeah, you looked exhausted. It was really tiring. So that was really fun. And there was a moment where we said, wow, that's good. There is also a danger in that moment that actually what our angel investor right at the beginning, a chap called Jeff Squire, wonderful man, absolutely brilliant technologist. He invested in our business on a handshake. And he basically said, you know, I did well out of your investment. And he said, the trouble was at the end of it, I thought I had the Midas touch. So then I invested in a whole heap of other things and they all lost me money. I knew how he felt because we did a whole heap of stuff afterwards and most of it wasn't very good. So, yeah, be careful. If you start believing that you've arrived, you can actually do yourself a great disservice.
Tell me, as a woman and a mother and as a father, parents in this business, and then I want to talk about Star Count, what was parenting like during that period of time? How did you do it?
Well, spend a lot on childcare.
Yeah, I was going to say,
we definitely,
a lot of help.
Yeah, we did need good nannies and we did go for nannies rather than we just couldn't manage the complexity.
Yeah.
So we had some fabulous nannies, not many actually, I think four through the entire time.
Yeah.
And that made a massive difference. But we also agreed that we would never both be away internationally together.
Okay.
So one of us would always be at home.
Yeah.
To make sure that the children had some sense of stability and continuity. And so that was our construct. And it also made us both play our part much more concisely than perhaps we would have done if we always played the role of two at a time. So, you know, we would literally say to our partners, do you want me or do you want Clive?
Yeah.
And they had to decide which one. Oh, no, we want both of you. No, you can't have both of us. Which one?
Hoping that he would say Clive. No, just joking.
Well, I did rather.
Don't you want the genius? Surely you want the genius.
There's only so much genius anyone can handle.
Says she. How many years have you been married?
Oh, God, 40-ish.
Yeah, well, you've done well. Yeah. Your remarkable hard work. Obviously, you took that year off and it didn't stop because I'm fascinated by the work, and I was talking to you offline about it, that you're doing as the CEO of Star Count, and you described what Don Humby did as the rear view mirror, tapping into what people did, whereas Star Count is about predicting what people will do. Mm. And it's about connecting with customers on an emotional level and sort of understanding what they truly love and care about. And anyone on this podcast, it's 4.5 years, he has heard me talk about emotional commerce and the power of emotion in retail, in business. Would you share what the company's mission is?
Well, I heard you talk on this, Holly, and I took your talk and passed it to the team at StarCount.
No, you did not.
I absolutely did. I said, listen to this woman. She knows what she's talking about.
That's like Beyonce asking me, even knowing my name. Are you joking me?
No, I'm absolutely not. I loved your talk on this. I thought it was so strong.
Oh my gosh, I'm now trying to work out what the hell that talk that was. I'm blushing. I can't believe it.
No, it's a very good one. And for those who haven't heard it, that understand the emotional engagement, the drivers of your customers, fundamentally important. So you nailed it in that. And for me, StarCount is exactly that. Just to be clear, I am no longer the CEO. I'm no longer the chair of StarCount. My daughter runs
yes,
it.
Yes, of course. I'm so sorry.
No,
I knew that.
That's
actually
all right. I'm incredibly proud of her. She's doing a fabulous job. She has a fantastic partner, Michael, who is the technologist, the guru, etc. And she is, although she trained as a data scientist, she is the CEO and businesswoman.
Amazing.
So they've picked up on this power of two.
Amazing.
And they are flying and they're doing a really, really good job. So they're using data, all the rich data from social media, mm-hmm. to identify what people like, love, share, feel. And they are using all of that data to create personas that they can apply into postcode geography, effectively. Mm-hmm. So tiny little geographic units to make sure that it's compliant with GDPR.
Mm.
So all the legislation around privacy. This is really, really clever. They've also layered on open banking data and certain search data. They've got layers and layers of data. So they're really new era and they're working hard in the ad tech business. So all the big advertising groups to actually help replace what was the kind of cookie.
Yes.
More simplistic era. So, yeah.
And do you think your daughter literally... you must have had this conversation because I know you were working together, weren't you, as well? Like, she followed in your footsteps. It must be an amazing thing to work with and support and mentor and shine a light on your daughter.
It is a joy. And I kept saying to her, are you sure? This is really a hard life being an entrepreneur and sucks up all your time and energy. Are you sure? Are you sure? And it, in the end, she just said, Mum, can you stop saying I shouldn't do it because I am going to do it.
That's a typical entrepreneur. Okay. That's the answer, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, my son also trained as a data scientist. He's running a data science team. He's working for someone completely different. And he's also doing really well. So I think, you know, data science is a great job for anyone. And I love encouraging particularly women to do it, mm-hmm. for the reason you said right at the top of this interview, which is women are a bit nervous about technology, but data science, they are absolutely naturals, really, really strong and good at it.
Yeah, just stop taking that word technology, just like finance.
Yeah.
Stop using these words to be scared about. Just wanted to come back to that business, to come back to StarCount, because it was, you know, those listening, everyone's a consumer, and I'm very, very obsessed by loyalty and those who are loyal rather than those who pass us by. And with the world speeding up and with so much information, a hypothesis would be for that she's busy and she wants to potentially, if that business is smart enough, create a relationship with it and then actually have less to think about. You know, it's just like when you find, you know, some clothing really works that you know, that size 14 or 16 really does fit. And you're like, oh, that's top of my mind because I cannot be dealing with wasting time with others. But I was interested when you said, if you look at the world we live in today, customer loyalty is a myth and that loyalty lives in lifestyles. What do you mean by that?
It's about being relevant and timely. So I think it's not a steady state loyalty. And actually, a lot of loyalty is how hard the organization works to win the hearts and minds of customers. So it's about being there for them at a time they want something from that organization and to make it readily accessible and available. So, you know, the best way of looking at real loyalty is looking at what people have tattoos of, right?
Yeah.
They don't have tattoos of brands on the whole.
No.
Maybe Harley Davidson, maybe Apple.
Yeah.
But not much else, right? So that's true loyalty. And, you know, if you've just watched Shogun and, you know, you're interested in Japanese culture, then you might see that. So really, loyalty is about respect for what you described, a customer's time and their relationship with you. So I think there's an obligation to understand as much as you can about that customer and their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, what is it that they are doing when they're not shopping?
Yes.
You know, what else is taking up their time? You know, do they have children at home or are they empty nesters? You know, are they running? Are they, you know, hill climbing? Are they singing? You know, all of these things we signal actually on social media.
Right.
So it's a wonderful place to find out what are the things we do when we're not transacting. And I think it's time for businesses to think beyond the money exchange to why. And it's the why that I think can differentiate the success of the future.
Gosh, I need you bottled up that we can just take a couple of drops of you in the morning and just think and just and speak in your eloquence and, you know, gosh. I asked a lot of people, so I was doing lots of talks, and I asked a lot of my audience a question over a couple of years. Can you tell me a single company that you consume with, that you transact with on a regular basis, that you feel something for, that you emotionally connect with? And over 2 years I did it, so it must have been, you know, 2,000-3,000 people, one woman said Boots because she bought tampons. And I said, no, that's not really what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about life stages of a woman. I'm saying you feel something for, you care about it. You actually might love it. Not one woman could name one brand in the UK.
Wow.
And I thought, right, I wasn't even asking because I thought it was Holly & Co. I didn't even ask because of that. Mm. I was literally trying to talk about emotional. I was trying to talk about feeling, you know, with our however many. I get scared talking to you about things like this because, in case you know much better, but 30,000 decisions and 5% of them are rational and 95% of them emotional. And if that is the case, then how come you're not feeling anything about something that we do all the time? But can you believe not one woman could name one brand that she felt something for? And then that was the moment for me that my life's mission was set. I didn't think that was what I was asking for. I was asking us because I wanted to look at them and see, you know, what do they do? What would you say to that? And are there brands that you feel do that? Or what would you say for that observation that I've made?
I mean, I was going to ask you what you thought it meant. I mean, you know, the thing that appeals to me about what you're doing is that you are creating a community where women can buy from women and where there is some sense of mutual regard, understanding, respect. I'm really interested in that because, you know, the truth is women are massive. They may not earn all the income for a household, but actually they spend most of the income. So women are decision makers. And I think a lot of that is about survival. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got the cost of living crisis. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is about how do I make my pounds go further? I like to say women make the pound go round.
That is good.
Do you like that?
It's good. I will always use your name when I will say she said it here. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, women, they manage that very difficult, you know, housekeeping process. But, you know, at the same time, they will make big decisions. It's not all the little decisions. They will, you know, they will probably decide which car mm-hmm. the family ends up buying. They will probably decide which mortgage supplier mm-hmm. or certainly which house is or flat or whatever is going
where
to
where they're going to go on holiday.
Exactly. So women make at least 70% of all buying decisions.
Yeah.
And yet most women are being forced to buy from men. Mm. And, you know, what I've said is that, you know, we have a name for a lot of expenditure. So, for example, the pink pound is the LGBTQ yes. plus community, right? The black pound is the black community. Mm-hmm. The purple pound is the disability. So we have all these different pounds. There is nothing.
I mean,
for the female pound, right? So I've called it.
Go on.
The invisible pound.
Yeah.
Because women are invisible. Yeah. Caroline Criado Perez talks about this very eloquently.
I've got her book right here. And she was a guest on my podcast when the book came out.
And a very, very good writer. So she talks about this. So I said, well, it's the invisible pound. Women are 51% of the population. We make 70% plus of all buying decisions.
And yet we're invisible.
Exactly. There you go.
Oh, my goodness. I just want to transport myself, not that you want me to, and to sit on that white chair behind you underneath that beautiful painting. Aww. And I just want to sit there and just sort of just be in your presence, because I have never interviewed someone that I respect so much, that is so eloquent about this subject, that I literally bore people to tears with 16 hours a day. Do you know what I mean? I think that's why my husband doesn't speak really anymore when I batter on about it. I'm sure you're, you know, it is unbelievable that we're in this situation, and it's all for us to take.
It's for us. And you, Holly, have got your finger on the pulse. So I'm excited that you see this, because once you see it, you can't unsee it. Yeah. Right. So you've got this. You are thinking about how you create this ecosystem that means more to women. And we all know that on a global stage, if you are granting desperately needed funds, you give them to the women of the community because women will use them wisely for the greater good. And they will help make money for the community. So we know that from a philanthropy point of view.
Yes.
Why don't we know it from a consumer point of view?
Absolutely.
And yet we're called shopaholics instead.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. That's all I just, that is my latest thing. Exactly. It's sort of shopping is seen as a derogatory act or something that we can't control our compulsion, or that we need to hide the shoe boxes from our husband. And actually, it's our love language. It's a love language that helps families, communities, emotional ties between all that we love and who we care about. It makes the world go round. It actually fuels love.
I love that you call it the love language.
Yeah.
It does make the pound go round.
It does.
But you have to see that with the love language. So I'm going to capture that.
You can. We can swap those little sayings there. Potentially, you have a better audience than me. But I want to talk about the female lead, because your phenomenal work and your educational charity, The Female Lead. As a woman tech, you, of course, have had first-hand experience in what it's like to work in a male-dominated industry, and that you have this sort of stellar cast of supporters, everyone from Oprah, oh my gosh, and Olivia Colman, who says, on the front of your book, When She's in the Room, is all about busting myths. Tell me about the charity and what you're working to solve.
Well, Olivia Colman is furious because she, who is a great actor, is paid so much less than male actors. So, you know, she has got such a big and important legitimate call, you know, which is why. Look, at the end of the day, when I grew up, I mentioned there were no women that you could see who were high achievers other than your mother or your grandmother. And so, you know, my first job was to get role models into schools. Mm-hmm. So I've now gifted 25,000 books to schools around the world to say, look, here are living, breathing, amazing women that you might want to learn about. And, you know, before then, it was Florence Nightingale and Ada Lovelace. And it's like, they're old and dead. They're very good, but they're old and dead. So, and then I thought, job done. What I noticed was that working women were saying, we're not seen, we're not heard. And that's why I stayed with the project. And during lockdown, Holly, what was so moving was that our following, as we posted these hopefully uplifting, positive elements on our social media, our following went crazy. We just exponential growth. So we, through COVID, women needed somewhere to be heard, to have some old-fashioned word, sucker, right?
Mm-hmm.
We now have about 8.5 million followers. So, you know, women have stayed with us. And for me, the opportunity I now have is to make those voices something that leaders and governments can't ignore. And that's my mission, which is to say it how it is, to represent all women, every age, every stage, but to say this is what we feel and this is what we need, and not to be broken up into little factions, which are legitimate. But, you know, we don't just want to be about menopause. We don't just want to be about safety.
Yeah.
We want to be women who are seen and heard for our entire journey and not made invisible, for example, after the age of 30.
Dell Technologies are passionate champions of small businesses. They recognise that it can be a lonely road, and so they have the Dell Women's Entrepreneur Network, or DWEN for short, which is a worldwide community of over 100,000 female founders. They run free events and mentoring programmes and have a network of brilliant women all connecting and sharing insight. They also recognise that for many small businesses, visibility is one of the biggest challenges they face when trying to reach new customers. So each week, Dell give away their ad break space. So now I'm going to hand over to this week's winner of Dell's independent ad break.
Hi, I'm Helen, and I'm the co-founder of Styled Home Studios. We're a curated location platform that connects independent brands and creative professionals with the owners of design-led homes for photo shoots, film, and video. Think of us a little like the Airbnb Plus for content creation. Styled Home Studios came to be because I was struggling as a photographer to help my small business clients access amazing spaces for their photo shoots. Traditional agencies just aren't set up to support smaller, shorter shoots, yet I knew that the owners of some of the most amazing location homes in the country were keen to open their spaces to small businesses more flexibly. All of our locations can be booked at a set hourly rate for only the time that you need. We're growing our portfolio weekly to include uniquely styled homes across the UK that can all be booked directly with the homeowners and without the big agency fees. Discover the perfect location for your next campaign or creative production at styledhomestudios.co.uk or find us on Instagram at styledhomestudios. We can't wait to see what you create.
Thank you, Del, for your support and generosity. If you'd like to find out more about Dwen and connect with brilliant and inspiring women, or you'd like to be in with a chance to have your very own ad break here on this series, head to holly.co/Del. Now, back to this week's conversation of inspiration. I was shocked, actually, when looking at the charity, which I'm part of and signed up and a paying member of, that the statistics, so less than 7% of world leaders are women. At the current rate of progress, it will take 286 years for the world to achieve gender equality. And that global gender pay gap changed only 0.3% in 2003. When I was thinking about this, I woke up this morning so excited to talk to you. But also, when I read stats like that, you can't help. And, you know, I'm in the world of maybe, you know, looking at money. And when we look at the statistics of, you know, 2% of VC money going to women, that means, you know, for everyone's math, 98% goes to men every single year. And I've been doing this for 20 years. So You can't but help feel that potentially I'm not going to make a difference. And that my niece, because I have a boy, Harry, who's 19, but my niece is just turned 9, that the progress I'm going to make is, I don't know how to be hopeful.
Mm. I completely agree with you. I had a wonderful conversation with Philippa Gregory, who, great author and historian, and she's just written this book called Normal Women. It's 900 years of history of women.
Oh, wow.
I cannot recommend it highly enough. It is genius. She is amazing. I read this and felt even more despondent because, to be honest, women have been written out of history for 900 years. Mm. And I said to her, wow, that really makes me feel that my play right now could disappear in a little wisp, not even a puff of smoke. I'm holding on to one thing, Holly, which is why.
Tell me what it is.
This conversation and your work is so important. My belief is that we're never going to change the world by making equality something about being fair or nice to women. It's not going to work on that basis. My thesis is that if we show that we can get economic growth, that we can do a Tesco, help organizations double their market share by understanding women better. And then, by the way, probably bringing them into the organization so that women can buy from women. If we can do that, we can change a lot. Because I think, sadly, we are, well, realistically, maybe driven a lot by financial return. So let's make it a financial return. Women are a good investment.
Proof in the pudding.
Absolutely. So that's my thesis. That's what I'm working towards.
Right.
I'm going to give it my best shot.
I'm with you. I'm with you all the way. My goodness, I'm with you all the way. And let me, before I ask you my final questions, as I said, I'm reading your book, When She's in the Room, How Empowering Women Empowers the World. What was it like? It's a very personal book. I'm enjoying it immensely. What was it like to write it?
It was quite a strange sensation for me because I have never really looked backwards.
Yes.
I've always forced myself to tilt and think forwards. So, yeah, it was quite strange, but quite cathartic. I have a funny story to tell, which was there is a book called Scoring Points, which was written by three men, the agency, a writer, and my husband, Clive Humby, about Tesco Club Card. It was a very good book, and I took it around the world, handing it out to all the retailers. And it was, like, very popular, explaining how everything was done. I only realised when I was writing this new book, as I look back, that as I handed this out, I realised as CEO of this big, what became successful company, I wasn't in the book.
Stop it.
I wasn't mentioned.
Are you joking me?
I had been made invisible.
Oh, my goodness. It's as if you made it up to make this story fantastic. Are you joking?
I'm not joking.
Was there a conversation across the breakfast table once you realised that?
I think I've never seen my husband look quite so uncomfortable and giggle so often and say, oh, surely you can't be worried about that now. Yeah, I am. I tell you what, the best thing about when she's in the room is I wrote it and I'm in it. And honestly, I mean, I don't even
Does
know
Clive
what
get
to
a mention?
I yes. put a little acknowledgement a little tiny. In there for him. I didn't want to be criticised for the same thing.
I don't believe it. Oh, I can believe it. But
I mean,
I don't
it's a shocker. It's how it happens. There I am building it with him from scratch for 21 years, reaching what we reach, selling it to Tesco, who don't take any prisoners, obviously, and I don't get a mention. Amazing. That's how it happens.
And you slightly bring up three children as well. You know, those, you know, tiny little things.
Only two, by the
way.
Two, sorry.
Yes, you were one of three. Yeah. But yes, only two. Yes, you paused and had, you know, had a business, another business baby. I have enjoyed this, as the listeners can hear, so immensely. I am going to talk about
Thank
this. Continuously. I like to use the analogy at this end of the podcast that it's one epic roller coaster that we're on as entrepreneurs. And for those who don't know about it, they think it's always the highs. And as you and I know, you know, there's a lot of being stuck in the dark ditches of the roller coaster. Can you tell me what you would say has been one of your biggest lows through your career?
Well, you know, I got ill towards the end of growing the business. I had breast cancer. I was rocked. My very roots were rocked. There's just nothing to say other than you have a really dreadful year.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me now, that's, I think, 14 years ago. So I feel so lucky. My high after that was realizing life is so precious and so wonderful. So there's always an upside afterwards, but that shook me to my roots. So, you know, health is everything, absolutely everything. Success is nice, but health is everything.
I can absolutely understand. And tell me, what would you say your conversely your greatest high was?
Well, I won't say having my children, because that's what I think would have to take the top end of the range. But, you know, finishing the business, hitting the profits more than we said we would hit and selling it, hell, that was just the best. That was like ringing the bell. It was everything.
I can imagine. And she was certainly in the room at that point in time when that happened.
Oh, it was joyous, really joyous.
Amazing. I'm lost really for words already, but I'm going to ask you, if okay, to read a letter to your younger self. I don't know what you're going to say, but I just want to thank you, Edwina, for sharing a part of your soul with us today. More than many people I have ever interviewed, I've enjoyed this immensely.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure, Holly.
Thank you. Well, I leave it over to you.
Well, I found this quite difficult, but here we go. Edwina, growing up as a middle child was not easy. You were not expected to do well, just to marry well. Your brother, the eldest, was expected to excel and carry on the family name. This was not an auspicious start. However, it was the time of grammar schools, and luckily you won a scholarship. You didn't knuckle down to work, but just had a laugh. Maybe you should have taken it a little more seriously. Your mother was a homemaker and expected you to be the same. From 14, you worked Saturday jobs, some better than others. You learned that having your own money gave you freedom and choices. Most Saturday jobs were minimal pay and monotonous, so you made a smart move and started a babysitting club, you and your younger sister. This was your first good decision. You both became popular. You were reliable and available, mainly because you had no social life. But you saw how the other half lived. It was exciting and glamorous, and it paid well. Your career's advice at the time was to choose between nurse, secretary, or teacher. You chose secretary after finishing your degree. It felt to you like going backwards, but it opened doors. You had your choice of job. You chose one working with bright software engineers. This was your second great decision. Your excitement for work kicked off at that point. You were surrounded by clever people who had fun but worked hard. You felt that the light inside of you had been switched on. You were energized and keen to learn. You said yes to everything they asked you to do, and you did it well. You were quickly given more and more responsibility, and you never looked back. What did I wish I'd been told back then? Don't worry if you don't make the top grades at school. Don't worry that you're not in the cool crowd or that you don't have a boyfriend yet. But never, ever hang out with people who expect little or nothing from you or themselves. Find a vibrant community and throw your energy into learning and growing, and keep doing that. Scare yourself every now and again. Try something risky that's hard. Don't allow yourself to be bored by playing it safe. If you aren't given exciting roles, go out and make one. Hard work can be exhausting, but the breakthroughs are off the scale for drama and excitement. Pick your life partner or work partner with care. This choice will have the biggest impact on your future success. Careers for women are hard, really hard, if you don't find a supportive partner. I used to think I wanted a tall, dark and mean type of man, the kind from movies. And then I met my future husband, who was the opposite. Big smile, blue eyes, and just a little round. But very, very clever. I chose well. When you're young, you obsess about how you look, but later you realise that the more you love what you do, the more you shine. And that glow attracts great friends and partners. No one ever realises what they're capable of at the beginning, but that should give us all hope. We're all a work in progress. Being underestimated and surprising people with what we've achieved is the best feeling, although by the time you make it big, it matters less than you imagined it would. So do it for you, not for anyone else. Being the best you can be is a joy and a privilege and a lifetime's work.
Oh my goodness. How can I be so lucky to hear that? When you were talking, I was thinking, all my career, I have been asked who my role model is. And I found it very difficult to answer because, and I feel quite emotional saying it, I've not been able to find someone who understands what's going on in my mind. And when you were reading that in this interview, the next time I'm ever asked that, for the first time in 20 years, you will be the person I will say. And I really mean that. Everything you have done, everything that you are doing, you understand. And that's all I can say. And I'm so lucky that this day I found my role model.
Oh.
And I'm thankful so much for that, very much so. And I wish you all the luck in what you're doing. And thank you for letting me see you, because you can't be what you can't see. So thank you so much for your conversation of inspiration.
Holly, you are a darling and you are going to rock the world. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this episode, can I ask that you share it with a friend and like, subscribe and review it too, so that together we can inspire even more people to follow their dreams to build a life they love.